Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Foreign Correspondents Club. My name is Keith Bredger, and I'll be your host today on behalf of the Foreign Correspondents Club Professional Committee. A couple of housekeeping notes first. Please, everyone, turn off your cell phones now. We do record the event. We put it up on our website, and it's such a shame if people can't hear that very interesting, and in Larry's case, probably particularly amusing anecdote because somebody's cell phone is going off. Second of all, I'd like to tell you about several of our events for which we still have available seats. Some of our upcoming events are already sold out, but we do have seats still available tomorrow for Matt Friedman. He's speaking on modern human slavery and update, and that is the human trafficking, particularly in Southeast Asia, that he has been fighting for years as part of the Mekong group. Next, day after tomorrow, we have Chandran Nair, who many of you know, and he'll be speaking on the other 100 entrepreneurs, a look at the everyday entrepreneurs who drive the world economy. And then finally, next Monday, we have a speaker, a real expert on a place I can safely say none of you here want to visit, unlike Southeast Asia or other interesting destinations on which we have various presentations. And that is Tobias Brandner speaking on life in Hong Kong prisons. He is somebody who has worked very closely with prisoners and really understands both how Hong Kong treats them humanely in some ways, but also how their lives can be very difficult in other ways. With that, I'd like to introduce today's speaker. First of all, to all of you, Merry Christmas. Now, why am I saying Merry Christmas? Well, Larry came over and said he has his Christmas tree jacket on here, and it is pretty blinding. I think it's more like a May Day tree at this time of year, but we can always count on Larry for entertainment. Larry has been doing taxes for a half century. He's based in Guangzhou. He knows the U.S. and Chinese tax systems and their interaction better than anybody I know. We're always lucky to have him. Today, it's actually a double benefit. We're also going to get a bit of a musical audition for his performance tonight with Alan Youngblood here at the FCC as well. So with that, I give you Larry. Thank you.
I'm back. I was gone last year. I'm happy to return. Got a couple of questions I want to start out with for you. First of all, you see the opening slide. Is that provocative enough for you? Does that attract your attention? Does it? Yes? I can't hear you.
Yes.
Good. Now the second question is perhaps even more profound. Are you sure you want to listen to a tax advice from somebody who's wearing a bleeping Christmas tree? Okay. I'm wearing my Lady Gaga wireless microphone today. I decided to splurge. I went out the other day. I bought it. This is unsolicited testimonial to Sennheiser, who manufactures this. They say they have the widest range of any of the wireless mics. Well, I made the mistake of not turning off or not putting on the mute and then going down to the men's room. There were some strange sounds coming up here yesterday, but that's over. Anyhow, I'm going to talk about China taxes. I'm going to talk about U.S. taxes. I want interplay with you. You don't like what I say? Razz me. Ask questions. Let's have fun, but see if we can discover some information that nobody really knew before, and let's have fun with it. First, I'm going to talk about China. How many of you are commuting back and forth between Hong Kong and China to work? There are people here. Okay, if there are those of you who are living, commuting back and forth, but living in Beijing, in Chaoyang, in Dengcheng, in Xichang, in Haidian or Shunyi, be aware, the State Administration of Taxation, the local offices in Beijing, have determined there's such an abundance of non-Chinese living there that we can perfect our audit process on individual income taxes by going after the non-Chinese. Now, it makes sense in a way. If you are a government trying to perfect your audit, Do you want to enrage your own population and audit them, or go after the non-Chinese? Same thing in Guangzhou. In the city of Guangzhou, the local office of the State Administration of Taxation issued an internal working memorandum at the end of 2013. They are going after Hong Kong, Macau, and Taiwanese companies. Not their employees working for them. You could be an American. You can be an Australian working for one of these companies. They are more interested in you now. The law went into effect at the end of 2013. Mid-2014, they started displaying interest in it. Now they are auditing. So beware. It's logical. If China is going to perfect its audit for individual income taxes, why enrage their local population? Go after the non-citizen. That's what they are doing. Okay, you're either going to have a 90-day or a 180-day exemption, unless you are an executive, based upon the treaty that your country signs with China. Generally, you're going to fall into the bottom four, the highest level of the seven tax brackets and categories. You deduct 4,800 renminbi a month, and that's the percentage you're going to pay. But don't be alarmed. It's not that bad. If you structure your contract in China, if you structure that contract, education expenses, relocation and moving, home leave, housing, substantial portion of your income is not taxable in China. If you are earning over 120,000 renminbi a year, be advised, my friends, you had better file a tax return. Right now, the system is weak. There's only a one-page tax return with over 50 boxes on it. That's going to change within 2 or 3 years. Be wary of it because, sad to say, the State Administration of Taxation is using a role model to determine how they develop forms, and that role model is the Internal Revenue Service. Why are we laughing? Okay, now we get to the heart of the matter. Most of you are here, so we can discuss FUBAR and FinCEN 114. You never heard of FUBAR from the U.S. government. They call it FBAR, Financial Bank Account Regulations. Now, if you've got an F and a B, how do you say it? How do you make an acronym out of it? You need a vowel in between there, and this is definitely FUBAR. So henceforth and forevermore, whenever the IRS mentions FBAR, think of FUBAR. And I have done you a worldly service in doing that. Now, you've got to file every year. You used to be able to do a hand-filed TDF 90-22.1 and send it to Detroit, Michigan. You can't do that anymore. The IRS doesn't want that. You got to e-file. You got to e-file the FinCEN 114. FinCEN. You know what it means? It stands for Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. Doesn't that sound like pro-crime to you? Did anybody go through this? Were there any grammaticians in the IRS? I don't think so. If you, for any one microsecond, during 2014 in Hong Kong, had an accumulation of bank and brokerage accounts totaling $10,000.01, you are liable for filing a FinCEN 114 for your accounts in Hong Kong for 2014. You're going to be penalized if you don't. You want to go online and file that yourself? Well, before telling you about the URL you've got to go to, let's talk about health care. True, you're exempt if you're an expat. You don't fall under Obamacare, but you will remember www.healthcare.gov. It's easy to remember, right? You will remember www.irs.gov if you have to go to the IRS site, and it's a worthwhile site. Both of these are voluntary sites. What is mandatory? http://bsaefiling.finecen.trez.gov/N, you have to have capital, REGFBARF, Eiler.html. Remember it. That's the mandatory site. Remember that. Couldn't the government have exercised common sense and come up with a URL that we could remember? Where's the common sense? Has anybody thought that out? Now, what do we... Ooh, I got scared. I thought there was we got a problem. There. Okay. I thought the remote didn't work. It's working. Okay, now we're going to talk about FATCA. There are two FATCA forms that you as individuals have to know about. Then briefly I'll discuss what the banks and brokerage houses have to do. If you are married filing jointly, and you and your spouse during the year had specified financial foreign assets totaling $600,000 or more, not just the bank and brokerage accounts, specified foreign financial assets that you could only figure out if you have, if you go to that www.irs.gov and look at the instructions for Form 8938. And this is one set of instructions I encourage you to go to. Why? Because it's intelligible. It's actually written in user-friendly English. It's a rarity. How the hell did that get through? If you are married filing separately or single, you're going to have commensurately lower amounts. That 8938, it's a four-year-old form. The first 2 years of its existence, it was 2 pages. This year and the year before, 3 pages. The one thing that the four years of forms have in common is nothing in common. They have tampered with this form. They have changed it each and every year. And I have all the reason to believe that next year's form will be different once again. And I love it, because the more different it is, the more the IRS is forcing you guys to come along to me. And let me tell you, at my age, for the IRS to be funding my retirement plan is wonderful. Okay. The other FATCA form I'm telling you about is something that I'm advising you at all costs stay away from. Form 8621, shareholder of a passive foreign investment company or qualifying election fund. Let me tell you something. If you have less than 10% interest in a foreign corporation and the value of your holdings is $25,000 or more, you are supposedly required to file this information on Form 8621. I do not advise you not to file the information, but perhaps look at another form to file it so at least you're not avoiding filing the information. And I'm advising you about this for one simple reason. Look at the instructions at the end of the 8621. The IRS advises PFIC owners that it will take 15 hours and 4 minutes for annual record keeping. 15 hours and 4 minutes. Where the hell did they ever come up with those 4 minutes? 11 hours and 13 minutes for learning about the form. 20 hours and 21 minutes to prepare and file the form. All for an investment of under $25,000. What does that tell me? Yeah, I'm not going to avoid letting the IRS know, but I am also not. I also am going to avoid using this form if I have to. If you ever wondered what something that looks like English, that sounds like English, but is not English, read the instruction for the 8621. I defy you to tell me what it means. Even James Joyce Ulysses is more intelligible. Penalties. Let's say you've committed a sin of omission. You have transgressed, and you have not recorded all of your bank and brokerage accounts. If the IRS finds out, they can theoretically assess a 50% penalty or $100,000 on the highest account for each of the 6 or 8 years you might be required to file. Add 6 years worth of penalties together. Is this extortion? Is this confiscatory? I don't know. You tell me. What do you think? If you are responsible for Form 5471, 5472, or 8865, the IRS is going to fine you $10,000 if they discovered you haven't filed it. And there are people in this audience tonight, or today, who I know who have experienced this, because I've helped a couple of them get off the hook on this, and a couple I couldn't. They are actively enforcing this. Okay, now let's talk about FATCA and GATCA. What's GATCA? GATCA is what they have called the OECD's Common Reporting Standards. The rest of the world started thinking, if the IRS can get away with this, we can too. And by 2018, there'll be an alternative set of standards and reporting required from the world. You've heard of the G8 countries, haven't you? 7 of them have signed on to GATCA. Would you care to guess the one country member of the G8 that has not signed on to it? The United States. The United States. Okay. As of the end of April, 160,000 companies, 160,000 foreign financial institutions, brokerages, withholding representatives, what have you, have applied for the number, the GIN number, that GATCA or that FATCA requires. 160,000. How does this translate worldwide? What is its impact? Well, let's just look at the BRIC countries. Of those 160,000, 8,000 come from Brazil, Russia, India, and China. How much in China as of the end of April? I don't know, but would anybody like to guess what the exact number was at the end of February? Keith, what do you think? 1,500. 206. You can quote me on that. That's absolutely true. William Burns of Thomas Jefferson School of Law is keeping records on this. FATCA will only be as successful as the number of registrants applying. There are not enough. If you have a major problem with taxes in the United States, a major, major problem, there's only one lobbying firm I would go to, Kaplan and Drysdale. They have the guanxi necessary, and they charge the prices that go along with that. David Rosenblum of Kaplan and Drysdale said, quote, "Any institution that believes ridding itself of U.S. accounts as a means of coping with FATCA needs to spend more time with the fine print. Due diligence rules are complicated." David Rosenblum, bull bleep. You find me a bank in Hong Kong that will open up a new corporate account for an American citizen. They do not exist. Hong Kong and the United States signed IGA 2. There are 114 theoretical agreements or agreements to agree that the United States has for FATCA. 14 of them are IGA2s that basically require all banks and brokerage houses to send the information directly to the IRS. 98 of the supposed agreements, when it comes into effect, send the information to the government, and the government respectively sends it on to the U.S. government, and it's a long, cumbersome process. In a nutshell, FATCA is going to create problems because if nobody is reporting, what is its value? Now we're getting to the real crux of the matter. There are people in this room, I am willing to bet, who have sins of omission. They have transgressed. They have not filed all their data. If you do not qualify for the next two exceptions that I'm going to tell you about, then you can take advantage of what is perhaps the closest you will ever come to an IRS tax amnesty program. If you did not list a U.S. address as your primary residence for the past 3 years, you're eligible. If you did list a U.S. address, forget about it. No foreign procedures. If you spent less than 330 days, full days, in any one of those 3 years outside of the United States, less than 330 full days, then you're not eligible. But if you have been 330 full days for each of those 3 years, if you have not listed a U.S. address or home, you can take advantage of something that is a veritable gold mine. You have to file 3 years either original returns or 3 years amended returns. Those 35, 20s, 54, 71s, 89, 38s have to be included this time around. You've got to label at the top of each of these returns in red ink, streamlined filing offshore, and just hope that the IRS agent isn't colorblind like I am to the red, green, or red, blue spectrum. You've got to certify on a form 14653. Certification by a U.S. person residing outside of the United States for streamlined filing offshore procedures. 14653. That number falls so far out of the spectrum of IRS form numbers that you have to wonder, did some wise ass at the IRS use his street address and actually came through because nobody challenged it? Well, I think that's the case. Somebody has his street address as a tax form. It's wonderful, only in America. Okay, you've also got to file 6 years fine send 114s and list them under as streamlined. It's no big deal. You can file them, unless, of course, you have a Mac computer. Unless, of course, you're using Google or Firefox. The system only works with Windows and Internet Explorer. How much did Microsoft pay the IRS? Nothing? They got something for it. Anyhow, here's the key element for you. The top bullet point. You must certify that your prior non-filings are due to non-willful conduct. The IRS defines non-willful conduct as conduct that is due to negligence, inadvertence, or mistake, or this is, listen to this careful, conduct that is the result of good faith misunderstanding of the requirements of the law. I venture to guess that virtually all of us are misunderstood in good faith about what the requirements of tax law is or are. I've been working in this area for 49 years. Do I know all the things? No, I assume things. But you know something? Unless you have created a sin of omission with $1 million or more, if it's not that high, you really probably were good faith misunderstanding category. Think about that. Yeah, the IRS potentially can come back after you if they find out that you have involved yourself in willful fraud or criminal negligence. What are the chances of that? The chances are more than likely that you're going to have to provide some information, but it's not going to be audited. You've got to sign a statement. You're required to put information. Come up with a sentence or two. Don't come up with an academic treatise on everything you've omitted, because I guarantee you, if you come up with a paragraph or two or more, you're going to be audited. Put a simple answer, a sentence or two, rather than nothing at all. You can qualify. Take the chance. This is a golden opportunity. And if you have to catch up, my advice to you, my friends, is find a professional who can help you and do it in the not too distant future, because it is my belief that this program is probably going to be abused, and at some stage in the not too distant future, the IRS is going to terminate it. Okay, let's talk about the bite to the IRS's bark. The IRS literally wants to instantaneously cure your constipation. But how can it do so if there are budget cuts? How can it do so if that bastion of literary journalism, the New York Post, states that 43% fewer telephone calls will be answered this year by the IRS? What about Forbes? They reported that because of budget cuts, nothing's going to be done this year. And tax analysts, Tax Notes International, for whom I write, reported on January 16th that the IRS is closing its remaining three offices outside of the United States. This tells me one thing and only one thing. If you don't have assets in the United States and you honestly believe that you are non-willfully neglect, take the chance, go back into the system and file. This is the year to do so. It does make sense. I think the government wants you on their rolls without having to pay taxes rather than not have any record of you whatsoever. And if that's so, okay, I can live with that. You can live with that. It's the way to go in penalty free. Okay, now we're going to end the way I end each and every year. Time for you to slowly but surely catch the next slides, because I'm going to show you how inept a harmonica player I am. My friends, if you don't want partisan politics in the way of your being an active, concerned American expat, I urge you to go to the website listed up there. American Citizens Abroad is an organization I have been active with for a number of years, and look at the site, go to it, they're effective. They need your active participation. Americans must stand up and tell the IRS, you're screwing us, this is not right. We have an onus upon us that no other nationality does. Okay, some of you were writing notes, some of you were taking pictures of the screen. Go to my website, www.lifeilau.com, fat old Lee. go to my website and contact me through there, and I'll send you the entire PowerPoint presentation. And the last slide, the girl on the left is Pan. The girl on the right is Nan. Bangkok noir mystery writer Dean Barrett, when I asked, "Hey, Dean, are these girls legal?" He said, "Relax, Larry. At some stage of their lives, I'm sure they will be." But anyway, think of it this way. Who the hell is going to buy a normal tax book? Nobody voluntarily buys a tax book. Anybody who ever comes up to me and says, "I bought your book for pleasure and it was wonderful," I don't want to meet that guy. People buy a book like this if your back is against the wall and you really need to find out something. It prints up better. It comes up better on my annual business card. I got some here. Those who want may take. Okay, we're finished. You got to do the official thanking me, and then we start questions. And let me tell you one thing. Even though, my friends, we're scheduled to end this thing at 2 o'clock, I'm here for as long as you have questions. You have 2 hours of questions, I'm here for 2 hours. Don't worry about that. I'm here as a service for you. Okay, it's all yours. Can I take this off and use this one now? Yeah, I think
sure.
So. Okay.
There. Okay. Well, first, I'll officially thank you then. Thank you. And why don't I start throwing it up for throwing it open for questions? Who would like to ask the first question? Up here in the front.
I'm George Russell. I'm from the Hong Kong Institute of CPAs magazine. We've spoken before. We have. This is actually sort of more of a personal rather than a professional question. Since FATCA's been around, that we keep reading about this class of human beings known as U.S. persons. Now, they're not necessarily citizens. They can't, obviously, citizens, permanent residents, so forth. But I've seen references to them. You can be, say, married to an American and not an American and not living in the United States, and that the IRS may still take an interest in you. Have you heard anything to that effect?
Now that'll work. If you are not an American and you have filed with a spouse a U.S. tax return, I think all of a sudden you put yourself in the category of a U.S. person. Basically, green card holders are U.S. persons. Persons who were born in the United States but never turned back their passport, like Boris Johnson, was considered a U.S. person. There are a lot of very irate Canadians who are considered U.S. persons. There are a lot of U.S. persons who would not like to be considered U.S. persons. In answer to your question, if you are very prominent, and a non-U.S. person who actually is a U.S. person, the IRS will find you.
Next, up here, please. Up here, please, in the middle.
My name is Jeff Chen. I've heard, I guess anecdotally or speculatively, that for FATCA, that the Chinese government is sort of catching on, and that in the not-too-distant future, China may have its own version of FATCA. In other words, first of all, they'll tax globally. Secondly, they'll go to foreign governments to find information on Chinese citizens. So what's your view on that?
Okay, my view very definitely is that right now, China is concerned about the criminals who are criminals or fraudulent who have escaped China, and they are going after criminal prosecution. Eventually, China will change its system. China will try to go after its citizenry overseas. Worldwide taxation is going to happen in the future. I think everybody is going to do that. When? Who knows? First things first, there's a 50-box, one-page individual income tax return in China. First, they have to get rid of that and do something more frightening. It'll be a step-by-step process, but within a decade, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if we find China going as aggressively as the U.S. is. Not until then. Oh, come now! There
I'll throw
be more
in
questions.
One while we're while we're looking one while people are thinking about questions. Then, one of the real ways China differs from the United States is it relies so heavily on consumption taxes, which has helped encourage exports. So you've got the 17% value-added tax, you've got all these import taxes. That's one reason why so many people come to Hong Kong to buy. Do you think they're going to try to ramp up the income tax collection to the point that that's going to be really replacing a lot of these consumption taxes?
Oh, absolutely.
That's going to be a big shift.
First things first. First, you perfect your audit process. Why go after the non-Chinese? Why enrage your own population? Learn what you're doing first. But I wouldn't really worry until such time as China implements a real individual income tax system rather than a one-page system. Within 3 years, that'll happen. I predict. But my predictions have been known to be wrong too, so who knows.
Okay. In the corner back here, and then over here next.
Peter Church House, author of the Church House Letter. great presentation, Larry. Just stepping back a bit more of a macro thing, I think I've heard tales that the US tax code is 8,000 pages or 10,000 pages long. There's a lot of cry to simplify the tax code. But really, is there ever going to be any pressure to simplify it? Because it seems like everybody in Washington's a lawyer and probably a former tax lawyer. And with hundreds of thousands of tax accountants and tax lawyers, there's going to be no pressure or a vested interest to actually simplify. Is that a wrong assessment?
As long as there are partisan politics without a massive depression calling for bipartisan change, I don't think we will ever see change. There are far too many vested interests in the 744,000 pages of laws, rules, regulations, and procedures. 744,000, and you can quote me on that. Basically, I love so much information because for every specific preclusion, you can find an opposite. Hey, it works. The more laws, the more confusion. And believe me, you can, just so long as you find the right case to hang your hat on, you can challenge the system and it's not frivolous. I love it.
Every time somebody finds a loophole, they add 10 more pages to try to close the loophole, and that creates more loopholes.
They don't call me Larry Loophole for nothing.
Yes. Back here, please.
Larry, this was a great presentation. Hi, as always. And, you know, it just seems to me strange that the West, which I suppose has prided itself, right, on human rights and liberties and privacy, seems to be moving very much in the opposite direction. And I'm wondering why such a focus, particularly on expats. When you think about it, I would imagine, and you would know better than I, that most of us living and working overseas do tend to file our taxes. And I mean, have from your point of view, there have been so many people here that have been problematic?
There are 7.5 million Americans living outside of the United States. This is a number that more or less everybody agrees. Last year, 440,000 Form 2555 foreign earned income exclusions were filed. Out of 7.5 million, I think there are more unreported taxes. Americans overseas still are by and wide largely under the belief that if you owe less than the foreign exclusion amount, you are not required to file taxes. The U.S. government has never made the basic rules and regulations known in user-friendly English to the American population. I seriously condemn the IRS for not actively making its regulations known easily to the population. The population can't find out unless they're properly told.
But that's incredible. For every 15 overseas Americans, just on the back of the envelope, there's only one tax return being filed.
Yes.
That's incredible.
You didn't ask me before.
That is a really good statistic.
I expect to see that 2 days later in the New York Times. And you can quote me on that.
And part of that, though, would be non-compliance by people who should be filing.
It's a combination of non-compliance. There are a lot of students overseas. There are a lot of children. There are a lot of families. But 440,000 does seem too low. I think it's half is what it should be, or more. There is a definite amount of non-compliance. But a lot of the non-compliance is by people who are not going to owe taxes anyway. The larger the income, the chances are more likely that individual has an expat package. And one of the big four firms are doing their tax returns, whether it be correct or incorrect.
Is it is non-filing correlated with having second and third passports?
No.
No. Okay, interesting. Over here, please.
No, let me change that. No. No, unless you're Canadian.
Interesting.
Or unless you're Boris Johnson.
Over here, please.
So I want some advice on giving it up. are you getting lots of requests for consultation on people giving up their U.S. citizenship because of this stuff, and what's the process there? Do you know?
Oh, yes. I love it. As I said, to be relevant as a 72-year-old fart and to be having a stream of income that I never anticipated having, it's wonderful. It might be the most immoral process in the world, but how am I going to complain if they're funding me? The process, basically, is first you got to have another passport. If you are a permanent resident of Hong Kong and you are not really enthusiastic about maintaining your passport in the long run, get a Hong Kong passport first. Go to window 34 on the fourth floor at Immigration Tower. Get the application. The Hong Kong civil servant will look at you and be very brusque until you explain something that sounds adequate to him as far as a logical reason is concerned. And all of a sudden they change and turn to be very, very helpful to you. How do I know? Because I applied only to discover that Hong Kong and the United States do not have a common Social Security agreement between them, and I cannot afford to lose my Social Security. It covers my medical insurance. I was considering giving up my passport. I can't afford to.
Up here again, and one last question, then we need to wrap up.
One last question, and then those who have more, stay on. I'm here as long as you need me.
Just in very general terms, okay, for American citizens who have denationalized to escape U.S. tax, what is the relationship between that and the new FATCA rules? In other words, will FATCA come around and bite these guys again?
I doubt it. I sincerely doubt it. Now, if you have committed a criminal offense, if you have really screwed around with your papers, if you apply to expatriate, you have got to sign under penalty of perjury that your last 5 years of tax filings are complete, correct, and up to date. If you have blatantly not filed complete up-to-date tax returns, and you have a hell of a lot of money, it wouldn't surprise me in the least if the IRS eventually came after you. But it would require an awful lot of financial holdings for the IRS to go after you, especially if you don't have anything left in the United States.
One of the more speculative ideas I've heard of is that people who denationalize could get put on the TSA no-fly list, so that they would make it very hard for them to come and go from the United States.
Not so.
Not going to happen. You
don't Not think. So. You will get an automatic 10-year carry-forward visa for unlimited entry to the United States if you give up your passport.
Okay.
And there are people in here who understand that because I have clients in here. I have people that I work with who have gotten that.
Okay. Thank you very much. We've had Larry here before, and we know from experience he doesn't need any more ties. He doesn't wear them. So the staff here has very kindly wrapped a different gift for you today after we warned them. Here we go.
A coffee cup.
You know us well.
Ta-da.
Thank you very much.
Much better than a tie. Thank you. Now, can I take off this monkey suit? And I'm here, as I said, for as long as any of you have questions, I'll answer. There are three types of questions. Those that people don't fear asking in front of everybody else. Those that at the end, there are going to be three or four or five people in front of me asking questions. And then those who at the end, when everyone else is gone, they won't leave me alone until they can ask their question one-on-one. I'm here for all of you.
And before we forget also, we're supposed to mention live on stage tonight with the Alan Youngblood Band, Larry Lipscher. Thank you all for coming.